Blog Talk Radio.
Don Levy. Where's it Don Levy? Where's it Don Wilson? Where's it Don Amici? Don Corleone. No, it's Eerie House Radio is what it is. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from the weirdest, really bad movie. And you know, Dale, I've heard it from many different announcers over radio, saying it both ways. So you would be correct in either way, but I think in one of our broadcasts tonight, you will hear Walter Houston, who is supposedly a close friend of his, who pronounces it Don Levy. So I would imagine that is the way it is, but he accepts it either way. It's like me. Call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner.
There you go. And if you're listening in tonight, and you should be, you may ask, may well ask yourself, why Brian Donlevy?
Well, you know, because I couldn't read my calendar right. And actually, on January 11th, 1952, Brian Donlevy survived a plane crash. He was flying into a hillside in Solvang, California, but miraculously walked away unhurt. Any landing that you can walk away from is a good landing.
That's probably the only significant thing that happened on January 11th, ever.
Except maybe 10 years later, when the Dale Kay would be born. Happy belated birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Oh, wait a minute. You said the plane crash was 1952?
No, 1950.
1950. Then it would be 10 years preceding the the downfall of humanity, that is the birth of me.
So there were two crashes at that particular date. So, okay, two particular crashes.
Yes. Both of them were kind of like a downward spiral.
You know, it is kind of odd because Brian Donlevy, he was not new to flying. It was kind of odd that that would happen. Maybe it was equipment failure or something. But he served as a fighter pilot in World War I. He was wounded twice while serving as a fighter pilot during World War I. So he was an experienced pilot. And how you just crash into a mountain, I don't know.
I don't know. Ask Harrison Ford. He keeps crashing planes and walking away.
Yeah, I know, and John Denver too, right? Yeah.
But Mr. Donlevy was something that the others were not, that endears him to our heart. He is a person, a denizen, who was born here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Because all roads lead through Cleveland.
Yes, yes. Another interesting fact that endears him to us here on Eerie House is his second wife was Lillian Lugosi, a former spouse of Bela Lugosi.
See, that one, I you know what, I passed over the marriages, but I did the spouses, but I did, you know, I did see that he was a father-in-law to the, I thought it was through marriage of his son, but again, apparently it wasn't. Stepfather to Bela Lugosi.
Excuse me, Lillian was his third wife. He was first married to Yvonne Gray from 28 until 36. He got divorced almost immediately thereafter, married Marjorie Lane for about 11 years till 47. Then he got smart and stayed single until 1966 when he married Lillian Lugosi.
and they had a wonderful 6-year marriage there until he died.
Yep. Which I had nothing to do with.
No, you had nothing. Any more than he had to do with your birth.
That we know of.
That's true. He was from Cleveland, so you never know. You never know.
Never know. Because I know nothing about my paternal parent. That's,
you know, I don't know how much of his stuff you've seen on television or in the movies, but according to a statement he made in a 1944 movie magazine, he said he did not smoke or play cards. The only smoking he did was in the movies, but I happen to know that he smoked in like a fiend in every episode of the television version of Dangerous Assignment, including the Bill Standard Weekly Open.
Well, you kind of can't not have seen Brian Donlevy. He's been all over the place in movies and in radio. Is in the original Beau Jest, 1939, one of the great years of film. He was also in Jesse James that year, The Great McGinty the next year, Billy the Kid in 41. It looks like he did a number of westerns. He was in the Duffy's Tavern movie in 45. Radio fans, a great movie, Kiss of Death in 47. Quartermass Experiment and Quartermass 2 for horror fans. He was also in Jerry Lewis's The Errand Boy.
Yes, he was.
I remember him in Gamera, The Invincible, which a lot of horror hosts like to host that one.
I know that you mentioned the Quartermass. So he was starting the Quartermass Experiment and the second one, which was Enemy from Space. He played Professor Quartermass in that. They were kind of branches off of the British miniseries that is available on archive.org. Very interesting show. But the creator of the character, the original writer, hated Don Levy in that first role, and yet he still did the sequel as well. It just, he may have hated him, but the public and the producers didn't.
Yeah. Now, the only Quartermass movie I really am familiar with did not have Brian Donlevy, and that was the third one. It was, I think, in the late 60s, 5 Million Years to Earth. It was a color film. Pretty good. Pretty good movie. Pretty scary.
He was even in How to Stuff a Wild Bikini.
Yes. Oh, let me tell you how you can stuff a wild bikini. Also in Curse of the Fly in 1965.
Yes. Yeah. And there was your Gamera the Invincible in 1966. And last film being Pit Stop in 1969. That was 3 years before he passed, so interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, his big break came in 35 when he was cast with Edward G. Robinson in Barbary Coast. good flick to be in.
He actually started off as acting on Broadway, and at the time, New York had basically most of your silent movie studios, and he did at least a half a dozen silent movies. Two of them he was uncredited in, but you're talking about Mother's Boy, A Man of Quality, School for Wives, Monsieur Bucaire, and Damaged Hearts. He also did a couple of shorts. So he was at the very end of silent movies and was right there. You're right. The first big role in the Speakies. It was Barbary Coast. You're right. As Knuckles Jacoby.
Yeah. Good old Knuckles. Oh wow, he was in Destry Rides again as the main villain. Oh, I'll be darned.
There are just so many roles he's played over the air, and that's not even to talking about all the different things that he did in radio, whether it be on. The series that he did, I think, ran for about 5 years, which was a Dangerous Assignment, but also his I think it was two seasons of Dangerous Assignment that went on for television. Interesting thing about that, and I think we mentioned it before, but I'm going to mention it again. He wanted to do it for television so badly, but he couldn't get a studio to pick it up. So he picked up the entire cost of the thing, syndicated it out, and probably made five times the amount of money he ever would have made just acting it and letting somebody else produce it for him.
Very well done, too. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of, in fact, Gamera is the only public domain film I am aware of that he stars in. But we got some radio, of course.
We do. And he was on a lot of radio programs that would need individual actors, like Suspense. We have a special from the Navy that he tonight that we're here, and he was a special guest on some variety shows where he even did a comedy sketch that we're going to be joining on. Usually, no matter where he showed up, and I think even on a big show, he showed up, and they threw him into a dramatic sketch there as well. And that's what they mostly did, but it'll be fun to hear him do a little bit of comedy here later tonight as well. And we are going to share that.
Yep, and now that we've got things, or at least we believe we have things working properly tonight, we'll try to leave room at the end of the show for some Wheel of Radio. I know Fogsbane was looking forward to that. Hi, Foggy. And also Vorpal Bite and Evil Annie are joining us in the chat.
So, yes, we should have quite a bit of – we have quite a bit of radio and should have quite a bit of fun. Very interesting Dangerous Assignment program tonight. Of course, it was of international – you don't really call it spy back then. You call it international intrigue is what you have. And that's what we have here tonight, some international intrigue from Dangerous Assignment, where Brian Dunleavy goes around the world trying to stop some trouble, but usually causing some along with the trouble he's trying to stop. So you never know.
That's perfect. And tonight's title sounds very intriguing. It reminds me of my first wife, but the title is called Deadly Bacteria.
Yep, from June 7th, 1950.
And here
Wheaties
is
presents
one.
Dangerous Assignment. On stage tonight from Hollywood, Dangerous Assignment, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations. Dangerous Assignment. Starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. When I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize that this assignment is going to involve my trying to save the lives of several thousand people with just a ferry boat whistle, a window, and a hunk of tape.
Well, here he is, Commissioner. I found him slaving over a hot swimming pool.
Thanks, Ruth. Morning, Steve.
Commissioner?
I'll have his papers in order when you're through with him, Commissioner.
Steve! What do you know about Istanbul, Turkey?
Well, is that something like chicken a la king?
You can take that up with their Chamber of Commerce the day after tomorrow.
What? I'm flying to Turkey?
You're practically airborne right now.
What's the deal?
Steve, with the Korean situation what it is, we're up against a giant conspiracy to discredit us in all parts of the world. And we've got to be on the alert against it, no matter how fantastic these attempts are. Last week, for example, we were accused of dropping potato bugs in eastern Germany to ruin the crop.
Yeah. I guess you can call that fantastic, all right.
Sure it is. But don't forget that a lot of people in this world have been brought up to believe what they're told.
Yeah, but look, how does all this tie in with my flying to Istanbul?
There's a radio commentator named George Champlin who's been touring the Near East. This morning he called his headquarters here in the States to tell him he'd recorded something pretty hot on his tape recorder.
Well, what was it?
We don't know. He said over the phone that it affects our government directly and that whatever it was going to happen Thursday. Then the connection was broken off, and Champlin hasn't been heard from since.
He said it was going to happen Thursday. Well, look, it's Tuesday now. I won't even get to Istanbul until Thursday.
I know. It's cutting it awful close, but we can't help it. Now, Steve, this could be another of those attempts to discredit us. We've got to find out. Lieutenant Devrick of the Istanbul police is in charge in their end. Get over there. Work with him and find Champlin and his roll of tape. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Thank you.
Dangerous Assignment will continue in a moment. Now, here is the Wheaties man, Frank Martin.
Isn't that a perfect name they thought up for them? Says just exactly what they are. Wheaties. There just isn't anything that sounds wheatier than that. Nothing that gives you more 100% whole wheat energy either. The good kind that stays right in there with you all morning long. You just try it and see. Just see how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11. You get a bowl of Wheaties under your belt or apron tomorrow morning and see how the big Thursday chores all seem to turn out to be little ones. Dishes to do? Breeze right through them. Tough customer to call on? Nothing to it. Papers to carry? Ball game to win? They're all going to seem a lot easier with Wheaties vitamins and minerals helping you out. So tomorrow, for sure, see how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
That's the swell thing about my job. I'm always fighting the hour hand. All I have to do is fly 5,000 or 6,000 miles to Turkey and find a guy named George Champlin and his tape recording the day I get there. Well, my plane lands at Istanbul and I head for the police station. Lieutenant Devrick is roosting behind his desk, staring glumly at two natives who are squirming uneasily in their chairs across from him.
I am afraid you are too late, Mitchell.
What do you mean, Lieutenant?
You are looking for this man, George Champlin.
That's right.
His body has just been taken to our morgue downstairs.
What?
Yes. You, what is your name again?
I am Kozan, honored Lieutenant.
Yes. Tell Mr. Mitchell what you have just told me, Kozan.
Yes. It was a bad thing. I was leading my horse cart along a narrow road in the hills outside the city. Suddenly, I saw a car traveling down the road toward me very fast. It was weaving back and forth across the road. Oh, I was covered by fear. I looked for a place of safety,
confine
but I could
your
find...
story to the essentials, Kozan.
Yes, honored Lieutenant. I jumped to one side just as the car hit my horse cart and plunged over the side of the hill. I ran to the edge of the hill and looked over in time to see the car burst into flames.
One of my men nearby heard the crash and went to investigate. He found a body in the wreckage. We have identified that body as that of the American George Champlin.
I see. Kozan, you said the car was weaving back and forth across the road as it approached?
Yes, it was so. At first, I thought the driver was drunk. But then as the car drew near, it looked as though he was struggling with someone who was in the back seat.
Could you get a close look at this other person?
No.
Could this other person have jumped to safety as the car went over the hill?
That is a perhaps. The car hesitated on the side of the hill for an instant, then plunged to the bottom.
Where does this other fellow fit into the deal, Lieutenant?
Permit me. I am Abdul. What this man Kozan says is true. I was walking along the road when this car sped by me and hit his horse cart.
Did you get a look at the person in the back seat, Abdul?
Only for a moment. It seemed to me it was a woman.
A woman?
But I could not be certain.
Very well, very well. The two of you may go now.
Thank you, honored Lieutenant.
Thank you.
But leave your names and addresses with the sergeant outside this office.
It will be done. One question, if you will permit.
What is it?
Who is to pay for my horse and cart?
You will be notified as to the insurance company involved. The matter rests between you and them.
Thank you, honored Lieutenant.
A most regrettable development in the case, Mitchell.
Yeah. I suppose you know I'm also looking for some tape on which Champlin supposedly recorded something pretty hot.
Yes. According to our understand, it was something vital to our government. We did find a tape recorder and some spools of tape in the back of Champlin's car.
What?
But they were almost completely destroyed by fire.
You say Champlin's body is in the morgue now?
Yes, downstairs.
Come on. Let's take a look. There was nothing in his pockets, huh?
No tape, if that is what you mean.
Well, I guess we can't find out anything more here. Brother, his clothes sure look like they took a beating.
Yes, they are quite scorched.
Yeah.
You see how the sleeve pulls away in your hand?
Debrick.
What is it?
Look, wrapped around his arm under the sleeve.
A fragment of tape.
Yeah, just a fragment, but maybe it's what we're looking for. Come on, let's get a recorder and play it.
I'm ready, Mitchell.
Let it go.
Very well. I will start the machine.
Nasif, you know who this is? Good. Now listen carefully. The meeting will be here on Thursday night at midnight. Just a minute. There is too much noise. There. I closed the window. Now your job is to get the necessary equipment. You understand? Do not tell me you are getting faint-hearted, Nassif. Of course many will die. That is the plan. The Americans will be blamed for it. And do not let me hear any more of your stupid fears. One more thing. Contact the other party involved and have him telephone me for his instructions within 30 minutes. I will wait here until 10:30.
That's all there is of the tape?
Yes, the rest was burned beyond use.
Oh, great. We've sure got a lot to go on. So there's going to be a meeting somewhere in Istanbul tonight. It has a lot to do with a plot to kill a lot of people. Look, I still don't see how my government can be blamed.
It is very mystifying, Mitchell. We have only a recorded fragment of a telephone conversation to go on. But one thing is certain. We must find the location of that meeting place before midnight tonight.
Yeah, but how? That guy on the phone wasn't kind enough to furnish us with his address. Hey, wait.
What is it?
Rewind that tape and start it over again.
Very well. What do you have in mind, Mitchell?
There's a sound in there I want to hear again, up near the front.
Yes. Yes, I was wondering about that also. There, it is rewound. Now, here it is again.
Nassif, you know who this is? Good. Now listen carefully. The meeting will be here on Thursday night at midnight. Just a minute. There is too much noise.
That's the sound I wanted to hear.
It sounds like a boat whistle, Mitchell.
Yeah.
Have you heard enough?
Wait.
There. I closed the window. Now your job is to get the necessary equipment.
Turn it off.
You understand?
It's not much to go on.
Indeed,
but
it is not. All we know is that a boat whistle sounded as he was talking on the telephone.
Yeah, we also know that that whistle was sounded at about 10 p.m. The guy on the phone said that he'd wait there till 10:30. That's 30 minutes later. The peg's the time for us, doesn't it?
Yes, but we still do not know where he called from.
Yeah, that's what we've got to try to find out.
And we have no idea what's behind this whole thing.
And you've got me.
Excuse me.
I wonder.
Lieutenant Devrick speaking. Yes? What? But I see. Send him in at once. Mitchell.
What's the matter?
A very strange occurrence. This must be the man now.
You are Lieutenant Devrek?
Yes. You are the one from the university?
That is right, yes. I am Kumsar.
Hey, you look like you've been tangling with a meat grinder.
Tell us your story, Kumsar.
I work for the university in the research laboratory. An hour ago, I was carrying a rack full of test tubes to the vault. I was attacked and knocked unconscious. When I recovered, the test tubes were gone.
What was in these test tubes?
Cultures of many rare bacilli. I have the list written down, as you can see.
Skip the technicalities and give it to us in plain English.
Very well. In those test tubes were some of the most deadly bacteria known to man.
What? Look, do you have any idea who jumped you?
No. I heard one of them call the other Nassif, I think it was.
Nassif? That was the name the guy on the tape recording used. And he told him to get what he called the necessary equipment. It ties in, Devrick.
But that means those test tubes will be at the meeting tonight.
Oh, what will Steve do next?
Well, you gotta find them. You gotta find the bacteria. Or take a bath or something. I'm not sure. But you gotta find that bacteria.
Gotta find it. Some people
gotta
are pretty easy to spot.
You know, I was actually just trying to do a little bit of research here. When he started playing the tape, it got me to thinking what an early version of your magnetic recording tape this would have been in 1950. And what I didn't realize, because, you know, things were either transcribed onto disc usually or recorded onto a wire recording. I didn't realize that the wire recorder actually was made up. It was done again through magnetic impulses, but it was actually invented back in 1898, and I had no idea that the wire recorder was near that old.
I guess so.
It was a very interesting. I had a friend of mine who had a magnetic recorder that he restored and was working, and he could get the metal clothesline and put that into his machine, and it could record onto that metal clothesline. That was the closest thing we had to the recording tape or the recording wire of the day. So I thought that was really kind of interesting. That and I saw it work, so that's why it's that much cooler. But I had no idea this was before 1900 that these were available, because you only think of at that time the old Edison cylinders.
Yeah,
where that it was recorded onto, and it's kind of funny, even to the discs that so many of these programs that were recorded onto. Edison was the last one to go to the disc. He liked the cylinder. He thought the cylinder was actually far superior in recording quality than the flat discs were. And technically, he was right. They were, but it kind of like is the old Beta and VHS argument. The Beta was probably the far superior system. The VHS was flooding the market and was quite a bit cheaper. And because of that, it beat out, and so that's kind of what happened probably to the cylinder recording. And when Edison went to it, his recordings, his records, were a good inch thick, if not slightly over that, where the other ones were, you know, you're talking not even half an inch thick, were the records of the day. So just kind of interesting, the different formats that are going on during these times.
Yeah, technology marches on. I am not buying the White Album again. I'm just not. I don't care what format they come out with next. We've been through so much first, in our lifetime, you know, you had a for recording, you had reel-to-reel. Later came cassette. Of course, discs were around forever.
Right.
First the old wax type, and then later, you know, and more
don't
modern
forget,
records.
Don't forget the 8-track tapes.
And the 8-track tapes. Very much like the difference between cassette and 8-track, I think, was comparable to the difference between beta and VHS formats.
Yeah, I believe you're right. But just some interesting little side facts here as we're listening to this piece of magnetic tape that probably is just reenacted each time. But
yeah. But we're trying to make it sound good here. I mean, we do have a fine actor, Brian Donlevy, who we're acknowledging today.
Yes, and it is an intriguing story. This is one of those spy stories that isn't really a spy story, but it's kind of on the premise of, look, here we are in the midst of going to Korea. We're getting blamed for a lot of that, and there are other things going on around the world that people want us to be blamed for, so that that can interfere with some of the other things that we're trying to do and accomplish. Let's just think here. 1950, we're just out of World War II by 5 years, and mm-hmm. Europe itself is still trying to pull itself together. There was so much starvation and stuff, and that's where, you know, your Marshall Plan came in to help try and feed Europe. And so Europe is still crawling out of World War II, the damage that was left to it through the disintegration of governments and the bombing and destruction of buildings and everything else that happened.
Yeah,
so,
and these international incidents, you know, lend themselves to these great tales.
Absolutely. So even though we don't really know quite yet what this international incident, they're trying to track down a tape or what's more left of the tape or where this meeting's going to be. It's more for the fact of trying to figure out and then stop this international incident. So That, therefore, is the intrigue of our program tonight.
And that being said, let's move back to Istanbul, Constantinople, Istanbul, Constantinople.
Now, back to Dangerous Assignment and Steve Mitchell.
Mitchell, as you suggested, I have checked with all the boat companies along the waterfront. There is a ferry boat which makes a regular trip along the waterfront each night. At 10 o'clock, as it nears its mooring, it sounds the whistle.
That could be the boat whistle we heard on the tape recording.
But that whistle can be heard over this entire section of the city. That does not help us locate the room from which that man was telephoning.
What time is it?
6 o'clock.
And we've got to find that meeting place before midnight. That doesn't leave us much time.
Have you been able to think of any reason why you Americans would be blamed for anything that might happen with those deadly bacteria?
No. I telephoned my boss, the commissioner back in the States. He's checking on it for me. So far, all he knows is that we've sent quite a few engineers and equipment over here.
Yes, yes, I am aware of that, but I still don't see the connection.
Look, Deverick, suppose you call the ferry boat company and tell them to have their boat stop its engines at 10 tonight and keep sounding its whistle. Then mount all the tape recorders you can get hold of on jeeps and trucks. Use the same volume setting that was used on Champlain's recorder.
I do not understand what you have in
mind. It's a slim chance, but it's our only chance of locating that room. Have your boys meet me at the ferry boat slip at 9:55 tonight, and I'll fill them in on the plan then.
Attention, men. Quiet. Quiet. This is Steve Mitchell from the United States. You will take your orders from him.
I want you men to start up this road which leads away from the waterfront. Station your jeeps at 4-block intervals. When that ferry boat starts tooting its whistle in a couple of minutes, record it. Then drive a block away as fast as you can, cut your engines, and record the toot again. Each of the jeeps will cover 4 blocks. Lieutenant Deverick and I will cover the 4 blocks closest to the waterfront in our jeep. Now, when you've made your recordings, take them to police headquarters as fast as you can. Any questions? Okay, shove off and take your station.
I hope this will work, Mitchell.
Well, we picked a nice night for the job anyway. Look, the moon's just starting to come up over that building across the street.
Yes. One wishes he were not engaged on official business on an evening such as this.
Yeah, I... That's funny.
Hmm?
Looks like a man in the moon. Hey, Deverick.
Yes?
There's a guy on top of that building. Get down!
Mitchell! Mitchell, are you all right?
Yeah. That second shot hit the door handle beside me. Looks like somebody doesn't like the color of our tape recorder.
Come, we may be able to catch
him. No, there's not time. It's 10 o'clock right now. There's the boat whistle. Start recording.
The recorder's on, Mitchell.
Okay, we'll drive to the next block now. Turn the recorder off and label the recording you just got.
Yes.
We'll take one at each block in our stretch, and then we're going to make a beeline for head police headquarters. You got all the recordings together, Deverick?
Yes, 6 jeeps, 4 recordings each. 24 recordings.
24 hunks of tape. Well, I hope our answer's in there somewhere.
What are you going to do with them?
I've got 2 recorders here. Each of them is hooked up to a volume indicator. On one machine, I've got the recording of the guy on the phone.
And on the other machine, you're going to play the tapes we just made, huh?
That's right. We'll be trying to match the volume of that boat whistle. Now, watch those volume indicators. When the 2 needles hit the same spot on the dial, that's it.
I am ready.
Okay. I'll start the tape we made. Now, you start Champlain.
Very well.
Just a minute. There is too much noise.
No, too loud. Shut it off. The one Champlain recorded was louder than ours. Okay, we'll try the one we made a block closer to the waterfront.
But, Mitchell, we have 24 recordings to cover. This will take all night.
If it takes past midnight, we're cooked. Come on, set up that next recording. Start ours first, and then Champlain's.
Very well.
Just a minute. There is too much noise.
Hey, we're getting closer. What recording was that you just played?
Number 8.
Okay, try number 9. I'll reset the original. Ready?
Yes.
Let her go.
Just a minute. There is too much noise.
Yeah, that's it. Look at the needles on those volume indicators. They're at the same level. Okay, turn it off. That was number 9, huh?
Yes, yes. It was recorded 9 blocks from the waterfront.
Show me on the map of the city here.
Nah, very well. Now, let me see. Here, at this spot.
Okay. And I've got the ferry boat's location already plotted. Now, I take this compass, I point the point at the ferry boat position, and the pencil on the spot the whistle was recorded from. Then I draw a circle.
Ah, yes, I see. The 2 whistles were of the same volume. That means our number 9 recording was made at the same distance from the whistle as the original tape.
That's right. About 1,000 yards from the whistle. It also means that the room we're looking for is somewhere on the circumference of that circle I just drew on the map.
But half of the circle is out in the water.
Yeah, we get a break. We can forget about that part of it. And another quarter of the circle is out in this side of the channel in the harbor. We can throw that out, too. Well, that just leaves us a quarter of it. Are your men standing by, Deverett?
Yes.
Give them copies of this map with the quarter circle drawn on each one. Have them start along the rim of the circle from each end. Give them pictures of that dead correspondent. Tell them to try and find somebody along that route who remembers him. What time is it?
11 o'clock.
That's what I was afraid of. We've got just 1 hour to find that meeting place. So, we sit and wait and sweat. The minutes tick by. 11:15, 11:30. Then, at 11:40, Deverick's phone jangles. One of his boys has found a small apartment house whose owner remembers the dead radio correspondent, Champlin. Deverick and I beat it out.
You say you rented an apartment to this man, Champlin, several days ago?
Yes, Lieutenant, but I have not seen him since. Here is the apartment.
Unlock the door.
Very well.
No sign of Champlin having lived here. Mitchell, it is obvious that he rented this apartment for but one purpose.
Yeah, to make that tape recording. And that sort of points to the apartment next door. Who lives there?
A man called Groven, but I do not see much of him. He comes and goes mostly by night.
I think we're getting pretty warm, Deverick. Come on, out in the hall.
What are you going to do, Mr. Mitchell?
We're going to crash that party next door if there is one.
Oh, please, I do not want any trouble.
You got a key?
Yes.
Lieutenant Deverick.
What do you want, Turkan?
This cablegram from Mr. Mitchell arrived at police headquarters right after the 2 of you left. Here you are.
Thanks. From the commissioner back in the States.
What does he say?
It's a list of the projects here in Istanbul that American engineers are working on.
Good, good. Maybe we can get some idea from studying it as to what is behind all this.
Look, this is no time to be reading lists. Mm-hmm. I still want to find out what's going on in this apartment of next to Champlin's here. Give me that key.
Here you are.
Okay, get ready for anything, Deverick.
Yes.
Okay, come on.
It is empty.
Oh, great. Look, this has got to be the meeting place. Champlin already had an apartment in Istanbul. Why would he rent the one next door here unless it was to make that recording?
Maybe the meeting has not yet taken place.
What time is it?
1 minute after midnight.
Well, I guess the only thing to do is to wait. Hope we're not too late.
Yes. Oh, it's stuffy in here. I will open the window. There, that is better?
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute.
What is the matter?
Oh, brother, have I been a chump?
What?
I was
what?
So busily listening to the sound of that ferry boat whistle on the tape recording that I didn't pay any attention to another sound that was just as important. Look, this can't be the room where the meeting's to be held.
But why not?
You just opened that window. How did you open it?
Why, I just pushed it open.
Yeah, that's the point. It's a casement window. Now, think back to that recording. How did that guy close the window?
Why, let me see. He just... Wait, he pulled the window down.
Yeah, that's the point. It was an up-and-down window. And this one's a casement window. This isn't the room.
Yes, you are right, Mitchell. But that means we have lost.
Where's that apartment house owner?
Dragner?
Yes.
Look, Dragner, do you have any apartments in this building that have up-and-down windows?
I don't believe so. They all have casement windows. Except a little room on the roof.
What little room?
Oh, just a small place on the roof which is rented to a friend of Groven. The man who has this apartment.
Come on, Deverick.
You think that is the place, Mitchell?
It's got to be the place. I only hope we're not too late. Here. This must be the door that opens out on the roof. Yeah.
Mitchell, there is the room over there.
Yeah, sort of a poor man's penthouse.
Wait, someone is coming out.
Yeah, one of them's got a little black bag.
Abdul, the police, take care of them. I will take the bag.
Anyone? Stop or I will shoot.
You will not shoot.
Out of the way, butcher.
Mitchell, the one with the black bag jumped over onto the next roof.
You missed. Come on, after him. Careful now.
Mitchell, do you realize who those two men are?
Sure. Kozin and Abdul, the two innocent peasants who witnessed Champlin's accident. That was quite a little act they put on for us. But now they've changed clothes and voices.
Yes. As soon as I heard Kozan's regular voice a second ago, I recognized it as the voice on the tape recording.
I gotta hand it to them. That was a pretty neat cover. Hey, look. Kozin went through that door. When we reached the stairway, Kozin is nowhere in sight. We pound down through the building and out on the street just in time to spot a car pulling away fast. It's Kozin heading out of the city. Devrick throws a couple of shots after him, but they don't take effect. We grab the first car we see and start hightailing after him.
We are not gaining much on him, Mitchell.
I know. Where's he heading anyway?
This road leads out to Lake Derkos.
But why should he be... Hey, wait a minute. Did you say Lake Derkos?
Yes, why?
That name rings a bell. I think the commissioner listed it in this cable. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. Hey, that's one of the projects the American engineers are working on. A new water filtration plant.
Yes, that is right, Mitchell. And that plant started pumping at midnight. It supplies one entire quarter of the city with drinking water.
So that's the plan. Kozin dumps the bacteria in the water and then half the city drops dead. And Kozin's got a half a mile head start on it.
We are almost to Lake Derkos, Mitchell. There is the water filtration plant ahead of us on that rise.
Yeah, I see it. And Kozin is there. Look, he stopped his car.
He's getting out.
I'm okay.
Here we are.
He's heading for that water tank.
Yes, look. There is the night watchman.
There was the night watchman. See if we can get a shot at him, Kozin.
Yes.
Devrick.
Just a shoulder wound. I am all right. Get him, Mitchell. It is up to you.
I head for the water tank. And Kozin, if I've counted right, his gun is empty. If not, he's got a slug for me. When I get to the tank, he's halfway up the metal ladder. Then I spot his gun on the ground and know my arithmetic is okay. I start climbing up after him. He's almost to the top by now, but I'm climbing faster than he is because he's holding the little black bag of tubes in one hand. Just as he reaches the top rung, I grab one of his ankles. He kicks at my hand, grinding my knuckles into the ladder. I let go, then grab both of his ankles. He twists his body and pulls me off the ladder, but I'm still hanging onto his legs. He's only hanging on with one hand now. I know if he goes, I go with him. I swing back to the ladder and wrap my legs around it. Then I jerk as hard as I can.
Ah!
I get back down the ladder, and Lieutenant Devrick is bending over Kozin.
He is dead, Mitchell.
Yeah? I shouldn't wonder. I almost went with him.
1 second more, and we would have...
Yeah, 1 second more, and we'd have been too many. Well, it's pretty fitting, I guess.
What do you mean?
Kozin was out to kill a lot of people with that little black bag, but that bag is the reason he couldn't hold onto the ladder. Yeah. Those bacteria were deadly, all right, to Kozin.
Now, here is our star, Brian Donlevy.
Well, Frank, I'm waiting.
You're waiting, Mr. Donlevy? Waiting for what?
Waiting to find out what you're going to say about Wheaties tonight.
Oh, why so interested, Brian?
Well, I want to see if you'll say about the same things I would.
Well, let's see. Wheaties are whole wheat.
Yep.
And that means good, solid, all morning long energy.
Check.
Wheaties are packed with plenty of vitamins and minerals.
Oh, lots of them.
That help you feel better and work better and play harder.
Check. Check and check.
Wheaties taste so good.
Check. Well, that isn't all, is it?
Well, what do you... Oh, you mean see how...
Check.
See how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
Well done, Frank. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Check, Brian. See you next week. Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell, is written by Bob Wright, with music by Basil Adlam, conducted by Ralph Hollenbeck, and is produced and directed by Bill Karn. Join us again next Wednesday when Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell embarks on another Dangerous Assignment.
Now, Brian Dunleavy, I believe you said you had another word for us.
Yes. I want to remind everyone that they can help feed Europe's hungry through CARE. 550 to CARE, New York, will send a package of food to a hungry family in Europe. Mail your 550 tonight. CARE, New York.
Next, The Falcon, one of three exciting mysteries, tonight on NBC.
I am trying for the life of me to understand this lie in advertising. If I have Wheaties at 7 at night, I'm done in by 11.
I think it's 7 in the morning, you see.
That would be different.
And I guess it takes that long for
anything at
7
at night. It's carb coma.
That's true. Well, you know,
Dale.
It's
a good story. And just as you had mentioned before the show started, that you heard that little PSA for CARE in raising funds to feed the hungry in Europe.
Yes. Again, it was still in recovery. We were fully recovered and having one of the most robust economies we had in a long time. We didn't have places for people to live, not because they were destroyed, because we had so many jobs going on and things like that we had a housing shortage, but nothing like what was going on in Europe. But it was still working on recovering from World War II and all the horrors of that.
Mm. I would imagine some of the housing shortages too. I think it seems to me that Joe America, just, you know, a regular person, not a wealthy person, they families stayed together. You'd have houses with 20, you know, 15, 20 family members in them, where nowadays, you know, young people, they move out and they're, you know, some of them in their teens, but in their 20s, and then they start their own household, you know what I mean, in a separate home from your parents. So that probably had a little bit to do with the growth at that period.
Well, true, and again, people were moving out from rural America to back to the cities, where more jobs were, and industry was at its peak, there was a lot of need for housing because the most need for housing was where most of the jobs were.
Yeah. It's the it's a trade-off too. Do you want jobs or do you want pollution? Hey. They come together in some cases, but it is what it is. There's all kinds of jobs if you look for them. This is a fun one.
There you go. But yeah, the interesting thing about this, usually you know what you're looking for, or he knew what he was looking for when he was going. Maybe not who he was looking for, but what he was looking for. So not only did he have to find out what this was, but he had to find where it was and why it was, so we could figure out what to do to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a little different than a lot of these dangerous assignments, because half the time when it was sent out, he was looking for or to look out for a particular person or people or to stop a particular event from happening. And here he ran halfway across the world just to try and figure out what he had to stop. And that's what kind of made this story just a little bit different. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That's fun.
Even if we...
We have a caller, Dave.
And
my gut tells me it's 66 and a half. Is it?
It is.
Welcome.
Well, hello, how are you guys doing?
We're doing fine.
We're doing great. Did you catch our first story with
if
Brian Dunleavy?
Scarce. Yeah, if I could be scarce, I'd be more popular, so hi.
That does tend to make someone popular when they're not around, doesn't it?
It does.
Everybody asks, whatever happened to so-and-so?
Well, Six,
so-and-so.
You always have great... Six, you always have great memories to share with us when you call, because you're into, you know, the horror host, the old-time television, the old-time radio.
Tell the truth, I'm freaking old, right?
Well,
I'm old.
If you want to say that, that's fine. What are some of your favorite...
We have wisdom to impart, right?
Yeah. No, what's some of your favorite memories of or roles of Brian Donlevy?
Oh, my God, Quatermass.
Mm-hmm.
What, isn't that the first thing that comes to your mind?
Honestly, no.
Oh. I'm done then. Well,
no,
that's my
but
major
as a,
one,
as a
but...
horror fan, it probably should in my case. But I remember him more in other roles, like in Beau Jess, like in some of the old westerns, and some of the later westerns too.
Those aren't horror, though. You see what I'm saying? Came to my brain was horror. So you know, of course he was great in the old westerns. He was in all kinds of them.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's just not what I thought of. I was thinking of more of the creeping, what was that one? The creeping something or other? Where
the Creeping
came
Unknown,
back from space?
The first one.
Yes,
yeah,
God,
that was the first one.
That scared me. Sheetless when I was a kid. Seriously.
Hey, I just stumbled on 1947. He was in The Beginning of the End.
He was. Oh, my God. Was that the Grasshoppers?
Yes, yes.
The Peter Graves, right? Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
I have forgotten
this.
You're right.
No, I let me backpedal. He is not in that. He is in The Beginning or the End, which was a docudrama about the atomic bomb in World War II. So my mistake, he was not in the Grasshopper movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that was kind of a play on words, wasn't it? So...
Very similar title. The time frame was off because I remember the beginning of the end was more the 50s with the giant grasshoppers.
Well, that was when we were having all the giant bugs. You remember, they had every bug known to man just about, you know, mutated and coming after us.
At least
how
he was in Curse of the Fly and Gamera.
Yeah. I always preferred the flying, the praying mantises. Yeah. Those giant.
Oh, the Deadly Mantis was a good movie, too.
Yeah,
that was the Black Scorpion. I mean, there was a lot of them.
Mm. I love Black Scorpion because Willis O'Brien did the animations of the big bugs.
Yep. Wasn't he Ray Harryhausen's mentor?
Yes, absolutely. Ray Harryhausen adored his work and got to work with him with Mighty Joe Young and... And, of course, we know where Ray went from there with all his giant monsters and fantasy creatures from the Sinbad and Jason and the Argonauts stories.
Yeah, a lot of Greek mythology. I loved it.
Yep. We got some great radio for you
dork.
Today, though,
Sticks. I was a tomboy, and I love Greek mythology and sci-fi and all. You know, I wasn't your usual girl, so we're an odd breed.
Where was your type when I was growing up? Girls didn't... I could not find a girl who would watch a monster movie or a science fiction movie and appreciate
it. That's what I mean. What is wrong with these? I was a Three Stooges fan. You know what I mean? All of that. And it was just totally a non-girly thing.
Just yesterday, what did you say about the Stooges and women, Dave?
Yeah, well, it was a commercial, I think an American Express card commercial, and a gal was sitting down there next to her boyfriend. She's laughing her heads off at the Three Stooges. And the sign said, if your girlfriend laughs at this, marry her.
Thank you. Word. Because most women cannot abide them, and I just love them. I own everything they've ever done.
No, it's really funny that you brought that up, because I had just shared with our audience my very, very first date. I took to see, and she humored me, but she didn't really like it. She humored me and went along, but I took her to see The Time Machine with Rod Taylor and Yvette Mimieux.
Ah, see, now how can you not love that? That was a big deal when that came on. Like, you know, you remember when you had to wait for movies to come on TV? You remember how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that would
come on
a Saturday or a Sunday. Oh, my God, that was an event. You know what I mean?
That was
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when I
deal,
when I took this date, it was in the 70s, so this was already a 14-year-old movie. It came back to the theaters for a brief run and in some of the smaller chains. This was a local chain in a suburb by me, and I took her to the date. I thought, oh, this will be cool.
Check
it out.
I got weak in the knees when they had the machine on the Big Bang Theory or whatever.
I know.
Oh, my God, there it is. Look. Those dorks don't deserve it. That's mine.
Do you know where else it appeared, the time machine? It had a guest appearance in Gremlins.
Oh, was it Gremlins? It's just me.
Yeah, in Gremlins, there's a scene where somebody's on television and they're doing some kind of, and in the background you see the time machine, and then they cut back to the scene and it's gone, and people are looking around like, what happened to it?
Oh, you think was that the second Gremlins?
No, it was the first one.
The first one.
It was Gremlins 1.
God.
Yeah.
I just looked right past
it. I just
me.
Watched I it for the holidays because it's a good holiday movie. I just watched Gremlins.
I did. I watched both of them just because,
I had forgotten they had, and you have to watch for it because it's in the background, but the time machine in there putzing around with it in the background, and then it's gone like it disappeared.
And then he went
awesome.
On. He pulled the lever and pip.
Yep. So. We've got more Brian Donlevy shows. We're straying a little bit from horror, but they're good adventure and murders and a few comedies too. Six. So we're glad you joined us. Dave's got a couple other little fun things from Brian Donlevy to share.
Well, we do, and why don't we start with something fun? Because you never get to really see him or hear him do comedy, and have a guest appearance he made on the CO Test Variety. Theater, which was actually hosted by the one and only Dorothy L'Amour, who usually sang a couple of songs.
Wow.
And had some guests, and they had a lot of fun with it. Well, Brian Donlevy, he actually made a guest appearance on one, and they did a spoof on the old husband-wife breakfast programs that were on the radio at the time. And this was from February 24th, 1949.
It was mighty nice going in the vocal department, L'Amour.
Well, thank you, Donlevy. And just to refresh your memory on something, here we are again.
What do you mean, Daddy?
Well, don't you remember what you said when we finished making Lucky Stiff over at United Artists?
Sure. I said it's been a lot of fun, and I hope we do it again sometime.
Well, this is the time, because we have a little comedy sketch written just for us. And if John Lang will do the honors, we can get going.
As the curtain rises again on the Seal Test Variety Theater stage, we are in the apartment of the Carters. Dorothy and her husband, Brian, are known to their millions of radio listeners as America's most perfectly married couple. And as every morning, here they are having breakfast on the air.
Brian, darling.
What is it, Dottie, dear?
You know, sitting opposite you this way at breakfast always reminds me of what a beautiful world this is.
Yes, sweetheart, isn't it?
Wouldn't it be simply wonderful if all the married couples listening in could be as happy as we are?
They could be if all the wives were as sweet as you.
And their husbands as understanding as you.
Darling.
And sweetheart.
Daddy, sweet.
What is it, Brian, darling?
Would you please pass the jam?
Here it is, honey.
Not the honey. I said the jam.
Oh. Oh, darling, you make such wonderful little jokes.
Mmm, this bread is delicious. Wherever did you get it?
Mmm, isn't it yummy? It's Mother Schultz's slightly cracked wheat bread. And Mother Schultz herself personally oversees the baking of each and every loaf.
Good old Mother Schultz.
Yes. And it's chock full of vitamins.
I should say so. Why, one slice of Mother Schultz's bread is equal to a pound of roast beef, four boiled eggs, or a half portion of chicken chow mein.
No wonder it's the largest selling bread. Why, I heard that everybody is eating Mother Schultz's bread.
Gee, I wonder what Mother Schultz is eating.
Oh, darling, you make such wonderful little jokes. But, sweetheart, look at the clock.
Yes, the silly old minute hand says it's time for us to leave our millions of friends all over the nation.
And what are we going to do today, dear?
Oh, what difference does it make as long as we're together?
And so, folks, ends another Breakfast with the Carters, Dottie Darling and Brian Deere, America's most perfectly married couple.
This is Dottie Darling.
This is Brian Deere.
You low-down sneak.
Yeah, double-crossing, Dame.
Double-crossing, am I? Just look at this item on the radio page.
Which one?
This one, and I quote... The success of Breakfast with the Carters is due to the untiring effort of Brian Carter. His wit, his charm, his...
Well, I've got to do something in self-defense. What about your little interviews?
Well, they're all true. Look. Look what you were when... What were you when I married you?
Hmm?
Why, I even bought my own engagement ring, and then you hocked it for $30.
All right. Didn't I give you half?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a chance to show what you can do without me. I'm through.
That suits me. I'll show you.
Well, don't just stand there. See who it is.
Huh? Oh, there you are. America's happiest couple.
Yeah.
I just heard the program in my car. Wonderful, wonderful. I enjoyed every minute of it. I'm the happiest sponsor in the whole world. You'd be on the air forever. Without me, I'm leaving for Mexico in the morning. Mexico, but...
And I'm flying to Paris tonight.
But my program.
Well, you'd better get another perfect married couple.
Oh, but I struggled so hard. When I was a little boy, I worked in a bakery. And now, after 40 years of hard work, I am Mother Schultz. You can't run out on me.
Ah, don't cry. I'll send you some flowers on Mother's Day.
Now, children, please, let's look at this sensibly. Can't you two patch things up? After all, Mother Schultz's bread is bigger than all of us.
And heavier, too. Look, I refuse to sit down to breakfast again with that man if he's going to go around saying that he's the brains of the program.
And the same goes for you.
Wait a minute. Suppose you both promised never to give another interview and I take care of all the publicity right from the factory.
Well.
I promise you'll get equal credit for the great work you're doing and you could once more be America's most perfectly married couple.
Well, I'm willing if he...
And I'm willing if...
Then it's settled. Good. I'll be here in time for the broadcast in the morning. Goodbye.
Bye.
And I want you to know that once more, you have made Mother Schultz a happy man. Good morning, what a beautiful day. And are you two lovebirds ready for this morning's broadcast?
All set. Well, that must be our announcer.
Ah, good morning, everybody.
Morning, Jerry.
Well, we still got 5 minutes. The microphone's all set up. The commercial's all ready. Yep, everything's all set. Say, that was a fine picture of you in the morning paper, Mr. Carter.
A picture of me? Well, yeah. You must be mistaken.
Picture of you? What picture?
Oh, yeah, right here in the morning paper. Let me see.
No, never mind, Jerry. We go on to the end.
We still have a few minutes. Let me see that paper.
Here it is, right here on the radio page.
Well, get this. Handsome Brian Carter explained to your radio reporter how he taught his wife acting, diction, and directs her with... So.
Hey, put that down.
Not the microphone.
Why, you dirty, sneaking, low down...
Put down that lamp. Put down that...
I'll put it down, all right. There.
He's out. Out cold. Oh,
we go on the air in a minute.
Don't just stand there. Get a pool motor. Get a doctor. Call in and get some water.
But there's no water on the table.
Well, pour the orange juice over him. To heck with the expense.
Stand by. We're going on the air.
Oh, to leave, or will he be able to talk?
Quiet. We're on the air. Good morning, folks. Once again, Breakfast with the Carters, and here they are, America's most perfectly married couple.
Good morning, Brian, dear.
Good morning, Dottie, darling.
Thank you, Brian Donlevy, and thanks to Alan Reed, who played Mother Schultz.
Good old Fred Flintstone makes an appearance.
You know, it reminded me what he was doing.
I was
going to
say he was the original Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Yep.
It reminded me when he played that Italian baker.
He was
doing
Baloo the bear, too, in the Disney, you know, Jungle Book. Remember Baloo?
That was Phil Harris. That was Phil Harris.
Oh, was it Phil Harris?
That was
yeah.
Phil Harris in the Jungle Book, yeah.
I thought Phil Harris was King Louie.
No, that was Louie Prima.
Anyway.
That was Louie Prima.
Quit correcting me. I'm going to shoot you.
And,
no,
and Louie Prima wasn't Sebastian Cabot either. No.
Yeah.
I love that part anyway.
Hey, you got to hang around with us a little more often, 66, because, you know, you joked around about your age. This stuff predates you. We're finding some great radio shows. We had pointed out earlier, I don't know if you were listening.
I'm loving this stuff. You know, I was coming, you know, just a little kid, TV was new. You know what I mean? But I can barely sort of remember when all we had was a radio. Just barely. I was really small. You know what I mean? Like kindergarten size. And then, you know, we had a little TV, and it had like a little 10-inch screen, and that was a big deal. You know what I mean? And then we got like a 17-inch screen, and oh, my Lord. And then by the time we got a color TV, the neighbors were coming over to peep at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the people were all green or purple. You made one tiny adjustment and it screwed everything up. But it was a big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But these radio shows really led to a lot of what you and I grew up with on television, 66.
Oh,
so
you
many
think?
Of these.
No,
the
Lone
it's
Ranger,
a
the Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Matt Dillon was actually played by William Conrad on the radio. Did you know that, Cannon?
Yeah,
and, you know, because he had that booming voice. I think they should have let him play him on TV. I think he would have been all right, but, you know.
Actually, they did do a pilot for television just out of respect for the cast. They had Parley Bear and Georgia Ellis and William Conrad. I guess at one point he got out of his chair. He was stuck in it.
he could have gave him that patented cannon judo chop. That would have took care of all the bad guys.
But but out of respect for the radio cast, they did allow them to present, to put together a kind of a pilot, but that it just didn't work. No.
Yeah.
Really, though.
But he really did work well on radio. We do a lot of this stuff here, 66. You missed a whole ton of Boris Karloff through December. He did so much radio.
He had that. What was it called? They later had
Tales
a TV show called that, but the web, some tangled something. I don't remember what it was actually called. Nightmare Web or something weird. But he was originally on the radio.
He had something
with
called
it.
Tales of the Frightened. He appeared in a lot of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. He'll appear as guests on variety shows.
I remember a radio show called, I think it was called Murder Theater, actually. I mean, cut to the chase, right? And they had this, first they had this woman scream, and it sounded like a vampire. You know how she used to scream? And my sister, I remember me and my sister covering our head with a pillow for that part. And then we'd always take the pillow off and listen to the scary story, you know? And I love that show.
That's the fun of radio, too, is you make up the story in your head, you know what I mean, as you're hearing it.
It's scarier. I mean, my God. The imagination we had.
That was
scared to go to the bathroom at night.
That was up until the time they did invent color radio, and that did kind of ruin it a little bit. But
yeah, but you know how they say that leads a little bit to the imagination? Even with women. I mean, it's true. You know, it really is.
We have more color radio for you, too, as a matter of fact. We got another piece here with Brian Donlevy. Dave, tell everyone about this Navy clip.
This was from kind of a salute to the Navy, a program the Navy put out. And this is kind of one of the dramatic parts of it that Walter Huston, the great actor-director, was in as well, where they were kind of discussing the founding of the Navy.
Wow.
Ooh.
They kind of... They dramatized it. That's what they did, so...
Oh, okay. And when was this from, roughly?
You know what? I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it's from about 1947, I believe. But I do not have that in front of me, but I will have that at the end of this sketch here.
See you in about 13 minutes.
The magic carpet switches you once again to KHJ Hollywood, California.
My name's Walter Houston.
Glad to know you, Walter.
You know, just the other day I was talking about the Navy to a friend of mine. You know him, former Navy man, Brian Dunleavy. He's an actor now, works in motion pictures.
Oh, yes.
We were talking about the Navy, he and I. Oh, about a lot of things. Things that those fellows have been talking about, you know, about how easily and naturally and fearlessly it started, and then went about the job it had to do. That was, 165 years ago. It's a long time, 165 years. And yet, you know, the Navy, those raucous, brawny privateers, started way back there, has never let us down. Never once stopped serving the United States faithfully and honestly against all their enemies. That's what their oath says. The oath a sailor takes when he joins up. I will bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America, and I will serve them faithfully and honestly against all their enemies, whomsoever. I guess everything else has changed in the Navy in 165 years, but not the spirit, the purpose behind it, the purpose in that oath. Ever stop to think what that oath means?
Well, for one thing...
I mean, what it means to a fellow... Well, any young fellow who decides to enlist. I don't care who he is, where he comes from, New York, Chicago, Oshkosh, Podunk, East, West, anywhere. You know, young America. Now, let's take Oshkosh. There's a strapping young fellow. Smart, strong, able. He's decided, so he signs up. Goes to a naval recruiting office.
Right in his own hometown.
Yes, New York, Oshkosh, wherever it is. He signs up and he waits for orders. Dreams about ships and planes. He wants action. So he does. Sure he does. Plenty of it. He loves it. But first, he's got to know what to do and how to do it well. They send him to a training station.
Out at San Diego.
San Diego, yes. Or maybe Newport, back in Rhode Island, or Hampton Roads, Great Lakes, wherever it is. He's learning. He must learn to be neat. He learns to be punctual. He learns cooperation, discipline. And he remembers the oath he took to defend his country honestly and faithfully against all her enemies, whomsoever.
And he'll do it, too. He's a great kid.
No, he isn't a kid now. No, he's a man. Look at him. He's finished his basic training. He's standing his watch, the ship on the line now. He's been on the deck for us. He isn't a kid. He's a man. Well-trained, full-fledged sailor in the United States Navy. Look at him now. Look at that young Navy man now.
Fine young fella.
Look at him standing on the deck of the battleship. Look at him swabbing off the deck of that destroyer. Serving his gun on that cruiser. Flying that rocketing airplane. He's in the Navy.
But he's only started.
Oh, yes. Yes, he can go to school, trade school. He can become a pipe fitter, a radio engineer, gunner's mate, commander, an admiral if he wants to. Admiral John Doe. He's a great guy. He's one of the men who helped to mold the destiny of this country. His very life is the life of hope and freedom. A great guy, that sailor. He thinks like a genius. He acts like a perfect, precise machine. He has the courage of Ajax. 1942. But you know, it wasn't always. Why, once upon a time, we didn't even have a navy. Remember?
Yep, I remember.
Remember how the colonies cheered when Washington took command of their army?
Most everybody did. But Washington had a lot of bad luck.
Bad luck? It plagued him, it trailed him, followed him, cursed him with failing confidence. There was dissension, wrangling. There were desertion and defeat. Defeat at Quebec, White Plains. All this, the prelude to Boston. There sits a great general and a great man. There sits George Washington, a crude desk, chair or two, his headquarters. Before him, within the city, a trapped enemy. But the voices of the very people for whom he lived echoed ridicule in his consciousness. Why doesn't he win a great victory? Why?
He has guns.
But there are no munitions.
The enemy is trapped in Boston. Defeat him.
How? How? How without support? How when Philadelphia does nothing?
Starve him out. Starve him.
Starve him how? He has the sea at his back. The sea is his.
We want a victory. Win this war or stop it.
Stop it, I say. It's foolish.
How can you say it's foolish? Fight for humanity.
Get rid of him.
Get rid of Washington.
We want action. Action.
Victory. Victory.
Get rid of Washington.
Action.
Victory.
Washington.
Wipe down. Wipe down. Bat me a hatchet, will you? Stow it. Do you hear? Stow it.
And who, sir, may I ask, are you?
Well, men call me Broughton. Captain Nicholas Broughton of Rhode Island. Good evening, sir.
Broughton, an uncommon name, but an uncommon title. To be sure, captain, eh?
Yes, sir, captain of my own ship.
Well, how can you help? What do you want?
Letters of mark and reprisal. If I can get General Washington's name on a piece of paper that says I can arm my ship and fly the American flag, I and my friends will show you what we can do. Give me the letters, the guns, the flag, and 30 days at sea. I'll bring back powder enough to hold our independence for 100 years.
Well, George signed. He signed. And Captain Nicholson Broughton sailed. The friends he spoke of sailed with him, out into the rough open sea, and into the history of the great nation whose foundations they made firm. Hopkins, Barry, Biddle, Perry, Rogers, Decatur. Brave men. Great men all. Toughened by hard living and hard work. Sailors, as some men are poets and makers of music. Sailors with all their hearts. They sailed out to win Boston and paved the way to freedom for the colonies. Sailed against the superior enemy, seeking to find him and to fight.
Captain Broughton, sir.
Hi, Mr. Bagley. Off the starboard quarter, I heard. What is she? Can you make her out?
She wears enemy colors, Captain.
Mm-hmm. Big one.
Aye, sir.
A rich one, too, I'll wager.
Aye, and riding low.
Mm-hmm. Hold full of powder for General Washington, or I miss my guess. Put your helm on!
She looks to outgun us 2-1, sir.
Aye. Coming about to cross our bow, I do believe.
Ahoy! Listen. Ahoy, sir!
We're flying the American flag. Ain't that enough? Go to blazes! Man your battle station. Prepare to open fire.
All hands to battle station. All hands to battle station. Forward.
Stand by to repel boarders. Put your helm a bit there. Ready. Commence firing.
And that was the birth of the United States Navy. With one broadside, from one little ship, one day, 1 hour, 165 years ago, those men knew one thing. Their country needed munitions.
powder to make its spirit count for liberty and peace and freedom among men.
Yep, but I don't reckon they knew how much it meant.
15 days. No word from Broughton at sea. 20 days. People jeer and grumble. 1,000 men desert. And even the few who've remained unswervingly faithful for so long begin to question. 25 days. This was a new nation. This was a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Fighting for the first breath of life. Reaching for the cup of victory. With failure parching their lips. 30 days. Time was gone. No word from Broughton. No word from the sea at all. Washington sat down solemnly to write the tragic words that had put an end, for a while at least, to the dissension that rent his country's heart and his. Then, in that blackest hour, the thunderous roar of triumph suddenly began. Began with a voice that tensely called, "A sail on the horizon!" Began with the sound of cannon and a voice that called from the sea.
"One sail! Two sails! 10 sails! Ha, ha, ha! 20 more than you can count! Ha, ha, ha! We've done it! General Washington, do you hear? Perry! Decatur! The rest and I! We've brought them back! 35 ships! 35 supply ships captured for you, General Washington! For you, America! 35 full holes of the powder you need! Powder enough to hold our independence for 100 years!
So you see, it wasn't always like it is today.
Not by a long shot.
A handful of ships flying the new flag of free men, upholding the rights and the destiny of a new nation of free men. That was the birth of our Navy. That was the start of a force that's become a tremendous force for liberty and humanity. That's what it is today. Written in the lifeblood of Broughton, Perry, and Jones, and Dewey, and thousands of American seamen. The oath to bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America and to save them faithfully and honestly against all their enemies.
Yep.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. And look at it now. Look at those battleships, destroyers, planes. Look at them on the high seas. Look at them on the storm-tossed waters. Look at them on the ice-caked water, the moonlit, sunlit waters of the world, with the spirit and the ideal of America and the flag of America flying proud and high. Look at them. Look at them everywhere.
Yep. It's the greatest navy in the world.
Yes. You can say that again, Uncle Sam. Your navy, the greatest navy.
Oh, that was pretty cool. The founding of the Navy.
I was only five years off there, Dale. It was from January 7th of 1942. It was a program called the Navy Relief Society. It was a promotion for the Navy Relief Society. So the translation means he probably didn't get paid for doing it.
Yep. Now, we got ripped off yesterday.
Yeah, it was definitely a love story to the military, wasn't it? But the first one was Shades of Desi and Lucy, wasn't it?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. the comedy was, absolutely.
I miss the arguing behind the scenes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As soon as the camera was off,
we started
the
a new thing here at Erie House Radio, and we have just enough time. I want to squeeze it in because we got ripped off yesterday. We didn't have time for Wheel of Radio.
Oh, Wheel of Radio.
Yeah. So if you would just grab the wheel, Six, and give it a spin, just give it a tug. You ready? Go.
Oh, wait.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
And it stopped on Orson Welles. We got
to buy a vowel.
Go
on.
So here's a little something from G.I.
Now, Orson, I've got a favor to ask. I've heard so much about G.I. Journal's contribution to daytime radio drama. Are you planning anything special for this edition?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Faye. I was wondering how we were going to get into this little thespic epic, one that's guaranteed to set radio back a good 10 years. A little music, if you please.
The makers of Root Voot, the sensational new vitamin food for flowers, present the ups and downs of Brenda Scuttlebutt, Girl Yo-Yo. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Men, do you like to putter around your garden with an old pot? Would you like to know the new modern way to keep your plants from falling down? Then get Root Voot, the new product that'll make your night bloomers snap to attention. Every drugstore has Root Voot. Ask for the new, convenient, pocket-sized 12 feet by 9. And remember our guarantee. If you think you've gotten gypped by buying Root Voot, don't grouse about it. Think of us. We got warehouses full of the stuff. Listen to what one satisfied customer says about Root Voot.
I planted Root Voot in my garden yesterday. And today, when I looked out the window, guess what? Everything was dead.
Thank you very much.
Not sure. Now as a little acorn said to the big oak tree, when you gotta grow, you gotta grow. So long.
And now for our story. The ups and downs of Brendel Scuttlebutt's Girl Yo-Yo. You remember that yesterday Brenda drank the iodine before the cops came, but they gave her the third degree and pumped it out of her. In the meantime, Harvey, Brenda's cousin by a former marriage, has gone to Squire Albert's to inquire about Larry, who received a tragic letter from Mrs. Philpott's nephew Richard, who told him of the split-up between Bernice and Fitzroy, the butcher's son, who happened to see Charles and Julius leaving the mysterious Grayson house on that bitter afternoon in December before it was set on fire by the gang of counterfeiters. Naturally, Brenda was a little confused by all this. Especially since Dr. Peterson had told her that little Nancy would recover and we'd meet her this morning in her little room. Watching, waiting, hoping. Suddenly, there's a knock on the door. The door opens. And Brenda speaks.
No. It can't be you. It can't be you.
Tune in tomorrow. Or somebody else. And men, remember to use Root Voot plant food. Root Voot makes even a shrinking violet snap at a tiger lily.
Pardon me, but won't it make the flowers and plants grow too fast?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but as soon as you sprinkle some Root Voot on the seeds, run for your life and take cover. Well, Faye, there you are.
Thank you so much, Orson.
Little G.I. Journal with Orson Welles. We've got a little bit of time here to tell you that tonight on Erie House Television at 8:30, the Atomic Brain, hosted by, me, and a chance to see Jim Klink. Later at 10 o'clock, Arachna and Dudley from Beware Theater come back to host Creature from the Haunted Sea. So that's on Erie House Television.
Dale, how do I get there? Because I'm having trouble. I go to the old thing.
Go to my Facebook page, look at the ad, and there's a link right there.
Get a link? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, right up on the Facebook page, there's a link. It's kind of a lengthy to read here. Real quick, stick around if you like in the after party with us, if you please. 66, we'll chat away a little bit. Thank our live listening audience, Evil Annie, Fogsbane, Vorpal Bite. Thank you for joining us here on Erie House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And
when
her.
Next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
You better bring that bone. Oh. What are you doing?
Well, that was fun.
It was. Who doesn't get enough of VP? Really?
VP Vorpal Byte or no, Vincent Price.
Vincent Price. I would listen to the man read the phone book. I would. The one ads, I don't do. Read him.
He was good, and you get to hear a lot of him here. He played the Saint, and was in various episodes of Suspense. So, tune in.
Oh,
tune
he had
in
the
often.
Voice for it. I mean, my lord. I mean, he had the presence, but the voice alone would sell it.
Well, he was in the original version of a movie you said you saw not too long ago, Dale, for the first time, Laura, and he was actually in the Lux Radio Theater edition of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a good murder mystery.
Very good murder mystery.
Laura, yeah.
Laura, yeah.
I can't believe it was that late in life before I saw it. I'm in my late 50s now, so.
Oh,
very
late. Like Rebecca and all those ones. I love this old stuff. These kids these days, it blows my mind how ignorant they are. They saw the new It and said that they were copied. They copied it from Stranger Things. I almost fell on the floor. Stop it. Stop. You know what I mean?
I know.
Go back, watch the original It, watch the original Firestarter, and then tell me who copied who.
Well, no, Stranger Things will admit that their production is an homage to all the things from the
80s. I don't get these kids that limit themselves to whatever came along after they were 12 years old. You know what I mean? They don't look any further back than that. And it's sad.
I don't know. Some do. My kids are pretty good about taking a look at older stuff.
And my kids love the old junk because of me. You know what I mean? I mean, even like, you know, they love like Nukem High, stuff like that. You know, the Toxic Avenger. But that was because they had me, you know?
Good old Toxie.
Yeah.
As Lloyd. You gotta love him.
Yeah, those are fun. So you mentioned that you have pretty early memories of Radio 6. Do you remember any particular shows?
Like I said, that one, it was called Murder Theater.
Uh-huh.
And then, I don't know, there were these other ones that are just dim memories. And, like, my dad had these old records of, like, the Gene Tunney Dempsey fight and stuff like that that we would play.
Here's what kills me. In 1974, for example, I was 14 years old. I was at the height of discovering and loving all these horror movies and, we had, you know, the ghoul on television bringing us horror hosting to shows. We had all this stuff. And then Dave comes along and tells me about CBS Radio Mystery.
Oh,
and
yeah, PBS?
I was blown away that how did I miss this stuff from the 70s? How did I miss this?
It was there. You had to deal with PBS. A lot of kids wouldn't even watch it unless it was like Sesame Street and stuff, you know? But later
well,
in
no,
night,
this was
a lot of good
this
stuff.
Was old time radio from the 70s, done like the old time shows, with much higher production values. And
exactly.
I'm sure Dave could tell you more. These shows were fantastic, Six.
Yeah, this ran for over about 9 years, 7 days a week. And Hyman Brown, who was producer director of so many programs from the golden age of radio, talked CBS into letting them do this. And so thankful that he did. We've shared about maybe 3 to 4 of them here so far, but there's just so many great stories from and it's so neat to hear. Sometimes you hear the old radio actors there, and then sometimes
you
hear.
You have to give them respect because they could create a whole atmosphere with just sounds. You know, and the rest of it, your mind.
But you also got to hear. You got to hear people like Fred Gwynne. Who basically was almost forced out of acting except onto Broadway and such. And you heard people like John Lithgow, who did some.
John
Lithgow's just
great
such
too.
An amazing. If you were on Broadway, because he was doing this out of New York, you had an opportunity to be on the Mystery Theater.
Oh, absolutely. Fred Gwynne, though, what a great voice he had. I mean, really, everybody thinks just of Herman Munster. They don't realize all that he has done. And he was an artist, too, you know. He did thousands of illustrations for children's books. So
he did get to use his voice in the later part of his career, Six, because, you know, in My Cousin Vinny. And Pet Cemetery. He was
very good
in Pet Cemetery.
Absolutely. And he was in the Cotton Club. He was a good match.
Yes. Yeah. So, Six, we'd love you to come back here. Let me give you an example of some of this stuff. And there's an endless supply of these radio shows. We don't have to repeat anything for years to come. Next week, for example, on Friday and on Friday, it's all about invading Mars. We've got an episode of Suspense, Escape, and even Jack Benny's going to come in with a I Flew to Mars comedy story.
Wow.
And then on Saturday, we have an X-1 great story called Mars is Heaven. The following weekend, it's all about dinosaurs. We've got great dinosaur radio shows, including some fun stuff with Stan Freberg and Ray Bradbury.
Is the Mars Dinosaur Weekend the one that Ray Bradbury wrote? Is that the same one?
I'm not sure. I can. We'll let you know that night because we like to do a lot of research.
That's a famous story if it's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
What would this? What's that?
A lot of Bradbury's early
writings.
Where
they go to Mars and they think they found their lost relatives and all that stuff?
That's Mars.
That one?
Yes, that's Mars is Heaven. That's Mars is Heaven.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It sounded so similar. It made me think of that.
There's
one.
A lot of Bradbury's early writings, Six, that were adapted for radio shows, and we're going to bring
as many of
them as we can. Yeah. After Dinosaur Weekend, it'll be Digging Up the Past. We'll have the Curse, a Johnny Dollar episode. Remember Johnny Dollar?
Mm-hmm.
He's like an insurance investigator, Cursed of Karnashak. Just great stuff.
Yep. And then
and you get to hear everybody here: Peter Lorre, Basil Rathbone, as we mentioned,
Basil.
A lot of Karloff, Lugosi. Yeah,
Basil.
Basil. And we're doing a show especially for me. It's all about me. It's all about the dummy. It's all about the dummy.
Aw, now come on.
No, ventriloquist dummies and scary stories like that preceded even Twilight Zone and Hockey Tina.
I can say something, but I'm not going to.
Go ahead. Go for it. It's all in fun.
I will not. I love you too much.
Okay. Okay. Oh, if you're only going to pick on me, that's fine. I love it.
No. You'll quit it. No.
If you don't pick on me, you're not paying attention.
That's true.
Okay.
That part is true. I've seen your wife on film.
She's too good for me. You know it.
Apparently she pays a lot of attention.
Yeah, I guess. We got a voodoo weekend coming up, Six. And an episode of The Saint with the...
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of Haitians buying voodoo dolls about now. That's all I'm saying.
Could be.
All I can say is they sold out of orange cotton candy.
We even have an Abe Lincoln night.
Do we?
Yes, we do.
Who gets
shot? Saving Abe Lincoln night. Yes, we do.
I mean, I know
we're
going to
do that.
Lincoln and all that, but how would you like to play? All that aside, you know. What did you think of our performance?
Just no Pee Wee Herman, Abe Lincoln references. Just don't. No.
No Pee Wee. Oh, you're cutting out Pee Wee Herman too?
No.
Honestly,
we're not telling that.
Oh.
We're not telling that joke here. but I think I accidentally did.
At least he was one comedian that kept his hands to himself. That's all I have to
Yes. Yeah. No one could say Me Too with Pee Wee Herman.
We're dipping low tonight.
Yes, we are. But, yeah. Come on over to Eerie House TV if you like later on, too. Got some Spook Show. Got some Arachna.
I intend to.
Wrap out the weekend. Good. Anything else you want to say before we take off, Six?
No, I love you guys. I'm glad I'm back. Hello. How's Gar? Tell him happy birthday for me.
Yeah, he's doing his live show tonight, but he usually joins us on Fridays unless he's feeling poorly.
Oh, okay. All right,
he's
guys.
Got a few little
it's
help.
Been a slice.
Yep, it's been a slice. Well, as we like to do in the after party, we say goodnight a la Jimmy Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say goodnight. 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 What more to say but goodnight? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Goodnight. Goodnight.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.